At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
And also, yeah, there's weird rules around, like, females or female pleasure in
it's a huge
sex
thing.
Scenes and movies.
Yeah, like, women can't be shown to... Yeah, they can't moan too much. They can't have orgasms. That's, like, the cardinal rule.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, female sexuality is definitely, like, the extra taboo. And then if you want to show dong, you're pretty much done in North America. Like, there's no dong, you know? It's a European thing.
More movies need dong.
It's true. Hey! Yeah, we got connection. It worked. How's it going?
All right. I'm great. How are you, Lance?
I'm fantastic. Why don't you start by giving everyone just a quick introduction to yourself, who you are, where they can find you, and join your socials and all that fun stuff.
My name's Elliot. I'm one of two hosts of a YouTube channel called Internet Today, which you can find by going to YouTube and searching for Internet Today. We do news stuff. Not as political as the Surf Sphere, but political enough that people complain about it occasionally, being too political.
That was one of the things I was going to ask you right out of the gates, is that your channel seems to be this very unusual blend that I didn't think would work on YouTube, where it's a mix of so many different things in this, like, nice, tightly packaged information dump, really. It'll be like, I'm watching about Facebook, and then I'm learning about Shane Dawson, and then I'm learning about, you know, something else, and then, like, it's all over the place. But it really works. Like, where did that start? How did y'all decide to start blending both, like, popular culture and news and other stuff like that?
I mean, we've been doing this for a while. We first started on the channel back when it was another channel, part of a big corporate entity that some people may remember called Machinima, which was the biggest thing on YouTube about 10 years ago, and then gradually just declined into nothing. But that's where we got started. And at the beginning, it was all very light, pop culture, that was around the time when the superhero fandom movie stuff was sort of exploding and was still fresh and new. So we were doing mostly that stuff. But I don't know. Over time, it just became, especially once we got more and more independence within the company. And then when the company died, we were completely independent to do whatever we wanted. So that's kind of what we cover, the topics that we want to cover, and don't cover the ones we don't want to cover. So that can be a pretty eclectic mix. It's not all politics, not all fun. It's just whatever stuff's happening that we feel like discussing.
How do you pick that? Like, what goes into the process when you're like, all right, we're going to talk about Facebook today, because this is just, it's the hot story.
Generally, my rule for looking at, like, because I'm just reading the news all day long. The thing I look for is this going to be interesting to talk about? Is there potential for off-the-cuff comedy here? With the tech stuff, it's, I guess, less about that and more just we really, really hate Facebook and are shocked at how many times they've gotten in trouble for being bad and keep getting away with it.
And brazen.
That Teflon Mark Zuckerberg. So that's a bit of a personal vendetta against him. Mm-hmm. I get the tech stuff. It's weird. I think the political stuff kind of arose out of the tech stuff, because big tech kind of is current year's railroad barons and, you know, oil barons. It's the industry of the 21st century. And we're seeing a lot of teachable moments to come out of it in terms of there's just a lot of opportunities to get pilled, they might say.
And a variety of multicolored pills, depending on what flavor you're looking for.
Yeah.
Have you
a
had
lot of
personal
people
experience?
Are definitely choosing the blue pill and the black pill.
Oh yeah.
But a lot of pills.
Have you guys had personal experience with that? With like censorship? Has your channel come under fire? I saw pretty recently you had a campaign about what were you medical misinformation? Was that what you got slapped with?
Yeah, I mean, we haven't ever had it too bad, thankfully. Like the worst that's happened to us is we've had videos get taken down for a couple hours tops, and yeah, I mean, it's just there. It's Facebook, YouTube's algorithm just sort of being overzealous, and I believe overcorrecting. We see this a lot in tech, where they will allow bad things to happen as long as possible, up until it risks, harming their bottom line, and then they overcorrect. So.
Or they're forced to do
something. Medical
misinformation,
political extremism, all that kind of stuff. And when they overcorrect, these aren't humans doing it. Maybe like a handful of them, but they're just going after anyone who's even mentioning ivermectin or even mentioning like QAnon.
Yeah. Yeah. I find that's the worst part about AI being the police of this entire online arena. Is that we're pretty much left to the fact that it lets the worst kind of people mass flag you if they just don't like the content. Like I'm guessing you guys weren't doing a pro ivermectin horse paste can cure all what ails you kind of segment. You were probably laughing about how it's kind of weird that other people are doing that, right?
But yeah, a theory we have, they're very opaque about how any of this works. But you know, we joke and we josh around, and with the ivermectin story especially, like there's just a lot of opportunities to riff on that and be very sarcastic and sort of jokingly take the idea of eating horse paste as a improv prompt and yes and that. And I mean, if you're watching it and you understand tone of voice and obvious sarcasm, it's one thing. But I think that a lot of this automatic flagging comes from the automated captions. Basically, they're doing voice recognition and parsing over those. So even when a human reviewer is looking at it, they're not scrolling through a video. They've just got the transcript up, and it's decontextualized. So if they see in the transcript of a video that someone is saying like, "Oh yeah, you should totally take ivermectin," like they're not getting the voice. They're just seeing the sentence.
You so just demonetize this interview.
Going on.
I totally agree with you. It's wild. One of the things I was gonna ask, because you said you started out in the machinima phase, were you around while you were reporting on popular culture, video games, that kind of stuff, around the Gamergate era, or was that before your time?
That was, I think we had just started. I mean, luckily we were set up basically as the channel to cover everything aside from gaming. So yeah, we were kind of insulated from that, but I do remember when Gamergate was going on, and it was it was everywhere. You couldn't escape it. I see these days, I see people sort of downplaying the importance of it, of that whole Gamergate movement, saying that there's no real connection between that and the just general evolution of politics since then. But I think that's, I mean, yeah, people are obviously maybe overstating it in some cases, but there's absolutely a through line from Gamergate to a lot of this other stuff. And yeah, I mean, you couldn't talk about anything without dealing with a bunch of very angry young, mostly men, just treating this like the fucking Crusades were going. It was wild.
But you had you were fortunate enough to be working in like kind of more like comic book stuff, superhero stuff. Did that clash with like there's an entire ecosystem online with, like, you know, the quartering geeks and gamers kind of stuff, where they've kind of taken that from the right wing perspective. Whereas, like, every single property, we have to tell you why it doesn't feature, like, a cis white male, and that's why it's going to end the world, and that's basically, you know, Batman's a lesbian, the world is going to fail kind of stuff. And I'm guessing you guys were from the other side. Was there ever a conflict between those two groups? Like, do you ever feel that, like, you know, would they go after you for maybe calling them ridiculous or vice versa?
Yeah, I mean, like, I'm not sure we ever really tackled any of those things straight on, except to be, like, extremely dismissive of it. I think the only time it, like, really became a thing was during the run-up to the all-female Ghostbusters coming out, which, like, you know, people got very they got very excited in a negative way about that movie, and so we were in this weird position of being like, I mean, this does look bad, and we don't support this remake, like, just on the basis of there's no, you shouldn't remake good movies because you're almost always going to fail, and it does feel a little gimmicky to just do. It's Ghostbusters, but all women. But, and then...
Isn't that,
so
like,
we would make fun of it, and then we would get people jumping in and treating it like it was the SJWs taking over Hollywood. It's illegal to be a man now, and if you vote for Hillary, they're going to turn all your favorite characters into women. It was a weird balancing act there, where... anytime we'd even jump into... not even defend that movie. I still haven't even seen it. I was so sick of the discourse leading up to it that I still haven't seen the movie, and I don't care. But, I mean, anytime we jump in and be like, these women are funny women. Like, these are funny comedians. I don't think it's fair to them to just completely dismiss this. Like, it might be a little bit funny. We mostly reject this on principle, but look, like, that doesn't mean Leslie Jones is a bad person who you should hate. And we would get so much pushback from just doing that.
Someone saying Ghostbusters 2 was also crap, but it starred the original cast. So there's
we bring that up a lot. We're like, guys, they already did this back in the 80s. Like, they already made a shitty, like, Ghostbusters rehash. And you still have... we would always come back to the point where, like, you're acting like... they're erasing over the tapes of all the original, like, they're taking the film out of the canister of the original Ghostbusters and running it through the shredder. The old one, the one that you love, is always going to be around. You can pretend that none of the sequels even exist.
Well, I'm going to say, I think I'm in the weird minority, where maybe because I just saw it at the right age as a kid, I actually liked the second one, because it kind of scared me as a little kid, like that pink goo and the painting that comes out of the thing and all that. I remember as
it's
a kid, I was like...
some fun elements to it. Like, it's not horrible, it's just kind of unnecessary, and I think watching it as an adult, like, the first one is very cohesive, it's well-paced, and the second one, it's like, they're just trying to recapture the magic, and, they don't really succeed at it, but,
they also got away
but
with
it doesn't
the,
matter.
Well, I was gonna say, the original got away with the ghost blowjobs, too. I don't know how that made it into a PG, it was a PG or a PG-13 movie. But I remember seeing that as an adult when all the discourse was going down. I'm like, I'm going to rewatch Ghostbusters. And then I was like, holy shit.
I don't know if PG-13 even existed at that point, because that was a weird thing. There was a long time where there was either PG or R. And I think it was Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom and the scenes where the dude, like, rips a guy's heart out of his chest while he's still alive. I think that made the MPAA consider that maybe there was perhaps a middle ground here.
Yeah. It's kind of like how Mortal Kombat and Doom started the video game rating system. They just added that extra one. Like, we got to allow teenagers to see the movie because we'll make more money. But at the same time, this is clearly not PG anymore. Like, we're ripping hearts out of bodies.
Yeah. Terrible rating, though. PG-13, awful rating. So many good movies got stuffed into the PG-13 box.
Oh, I totally agree.
And, we can get away with one fuck and three shits and one nip.
Is that still the rule?
I that's the thing. They're very unclear about it. It's very opaque. There's a good documentary from about 15 years ago called This Film Is Not Yet Rated.
It was
They look
very
into
good.
It, and It's yeah, the whole system is much more opaque than you would think. It's like the members of the MPAA are secret,
which is bizarre. And it's very Puritan too, right? Like they're basically consistently vilifying nudity, specifically like male nudity above all else, and then female sexuality, as in like, you know, women can't have orgasms kind of stuff. And then they're a lot more permissible to just like extreme violence, you know, like, oh, this can stay PG-13. Yeah. You just gotta, when you behead the guy, just do it off camera and then we're cool, you know, just imply
it's a very interesting reflection of just the general sense of morality and whatnot in North America.
Yeah,
but yeah, I think in that documentary, like one of the examples was a movie in which a woman has sex, and the actors do too good of a job of acting out the insertion part. Like it's not on camera, but it's like, you know, they're treating it as if it's real, and there's a moment there, and that was too much, even though they nothing is shown.
Insertion. No, children will know everything. The secrets.
Yeah, no, the dick. It's just supposed to magically like go in and.
Well, that's what I believe.
Yeah. And also, yeah, there's weird rules around like females or female pleasure in.
It's a huge
sex
thing.
Scenes and movies.
Yeah, like, women can't be shown themselves. To. Yeah, they can't moan too much. They can't have orgasms. That's like the cardinal rule.
Yeah,
like, yeah. Female sexuality is definitely like the extra taboo. And then if you want to show dong, you're pretty much done in North America. Like there's no dong, you know. It's
yeah.
A European thing.
More movies need dong.
It's true.
I don't know. Actually, I in general like I'm fine with less nudity being in movies because we do. I don't know. A lot of it historically has been kind of egregious. It feels very similar to, like, if you look at South Korean movies now, like, porn is basically legal there. So every South Korean, like, drama has just, like, a lot of
really?
Sex scenes that are, like,
I didn't know that.
That are, like, 10 minutes long because it's, like, well, it's a, this is art. It's not porn. But also, porn's illegal. So we're going to, like, skirt that line as much as possible. And I feel like American movies in, like, the 80s and 90s, that was, you know, pre-internet, it felt kind of similar.
I didn't know that was a thing. And that's funny because right now, like, South Korea is having a massive, like, just moment, you know, like South Korean films and cinema and TV shows. And it's,
yeah.
it's very in. It's the
in. It is very cool that the two big South Korean media properties have been, like, explicitly anti-capitalist. Or maybe not explicit enough for your Tim Pools and your Chrissy Teigens and whatnot. Yeah, Parasite, a lot of rich, verified, famous Twitter users were convinced that the titular Parasite was the family lying to the rich people.
I remember
and,
that discourse. It was so weird.
Yeah, it was very, so they're like,
weird.
I loved it so much. That poor, rich family.
Yeah.
And those dirty parasites taking advantage of them.
Yeah, that was so bizarre. Same thing, like, seeing Tim Pool trying to pull out this whole, like, obviously, Squid Game. It's just an allegory to communism. Like, you know, from the top on down. When you get food lines, poverty, that's communism. I was like, it's amazing. Even Ben Shapiro, who, like, you know, neither of us are big fans of him, was at least, like,
I love him, actually.
Okay, well, sorry. I'll correct that. Was astute enough to mention that, like, yeah, it's clearly an anti-capitalist message. It's very blatant. It's not subtle, you know, in its delivery of the messaging.
Yeah, it is. It's super interesting, though. Tim Pool is useful for the fact that he is so kind of transparent about his grift.
Mm-hmm.
And he offers a very, very candid look into the modern conservative mind in a lot of ways, where I can't remember who said it, but it's like basically people who are convinced that capitalism is great, they're just like incapable of seeing it any other way. So mm-hmm. any media that critiques capitalism, like, how could they critique something that I love? So it must be doing the opposite. But another hilarious thing about that is just the binary thinking of it, where like anything that's anti-capitalist must be pro-communist. And by pro-communist, I don't know anything about the ideology of that. They must be pro-China, pro-North Korea.
Venezuela.
That's it.
Yeah.
If you criticize capitalism, you want to live in China. I am a very smart person.
It's the modern version of you don't like it, you can get out kind of mentality.
Yeah. Yeah, but at least with that, like, the person shouting that isn't trying to seem smart.
Yeah, true.
Tim Pool is trying to seem smart. It works somehow. He gets a scary amount of people that tune in because he's a smart guy. We even still occasionally get comments on our videos from, like, my favorite ones are the ones that are, like, well-meaning. They're like, you guys are our favorite channel. Like, you keep it real. It's like, the only channels I watch are you guys and Tim Pool. And I'm just like, what the?
Where's the overlap there?
I don't know.
Oh, I didn't know there was a Tim Pool crossover.
But there's a lot of people who are, like, super into Tim Pool. They believe that he is objective. He's neither left nor right. He just calls the balls and strikes.
Perfectly from the center.
Yeah, which is insane. If you even just look at, like, the list of his uploads and thumbnails, just click on the videos tab of his channel. Like, how could anyone look at this and be like, well, it's impossible to say whether this person is ideological in any way.
What did you guys do in terms of reporting on Tim Pool? Did you do, like, a video on him?
Or I don't think we've even brought him up. Like, that's a whole... That's a hornet's nest that I don't really want to get into. Mainly, like, I mean, talking about content creators like that, the biggest problem is, like, our show isn't really set up for it. It's more for stuff like Some More News, where they can have a writer, like, actually spend a week or a month going through hours and hours of footage to really analyze and take down what these people are putting up. But I mean, our schedule is so short notice. Like, I mean, we are writing, posting episodes all in a day. So going after someone like Tim Pool, who's putting up, like, 3 hours of content a day, it's like, it's impossible for me, I think.
Do you find you've ever gotten sucked into that? Like, has there been, you had to just tell the story because it was another big YouTuber, or it's just like, it's not something you could avoid talking about, and then it just blows up into something else?
Yeah. Years ago, when JonTron got racist. Remember that?
That's funny, we were just talking about that today. I did a whole JonTron segment today. Yeah.
What was that, 2015, 2016?
I think so.
Yeah, when JonTron got racist, that was my first exposure to Destiny, interestingly. Okay. So it was all downhill from there. But I thought he handled himself really well in that debate.
Oh, he did.
And
yeah.
It was the whole thing was just incredibly frustrating to watch. We made a video about it, and, like, I guess if that were to happen now, I probably wouldn't make a video about it, because even that, like, it's an hour long debate. And trying to, like, sum it up in 5 to 10 minutes, it just doesn't really do it justice. And anyone who hears about it from us first, before actually watching the thing, is they're coming in with their preconceived notions, which in a lot of cases was people loving JonTron, because he made a lot of videos that they loved when they were a little bit younger. So how could JonTron be racist? And he didn't actually say anything racist, guys. He's just talking about black-on-black crime. These are all valid questions. Like, seems like you're overreacting. Triggered, but a little bit triggered. And yeah, but, like, that whole experience, that was, like, my first real experience, I guess, with the anti-SJW thing.
Crowd.
Like, where we talked about it, where I'm like, this is, like, objectively, like, offensive, and more importantly, stupid shit that this guy is saying. So we're just going to, like, cover it a little bit. And we got so many fucking comments of people, like, furious at us. Like,
really?
Yeah, just telling us we fell off. Like, oh, God, you guys are so disappointing. I didn't know you'd fall. You'd become SJWs. And, it was weird. Because I was like, wow, okay, there's a lot more of these weirdos than I ever would have thought.
Yeah, that's bizarre, because the thing with JonTron's rant is it's not like he was just like, well, I'm just going to ask some questions. It was like, it eventually got up to points where he was just straight up like, I just think like black people are predisposed to certain crimes and things like that, where you're like, what do you mean predisposed? Like, this is pretty strong rhetoric from someone, I guess, who's apolitical 99% of the time, and then just appears out of nowhere, and then all of a sudden it's just like, well, 1350, you know, statistics, all this kind of stuff, and then...
It seems... The vibe that I got was that this is a guy who doesn't leave his apartment all that much, has a lot of free time because of the YouTube money, and has maybe fallen down a bit of a like 4chan rabbit hole pipeline to some bad ideas that he hasn't really been challenged on before. And so he gets challenged on them and just flails like a bird who's got its wings shot off, and it's just weird and pathetic. And and all Destiny really had to do in that one was just use the Socratic method and get him to keep talking. And I love that, because it's like, oh, this is demonstrably like dumb shit this guy's saying. But there were way more people around to defend him than I would have ever guessed. And that was when I sort of realized, it's like, oh, this alt-right thing, which I don't even know if that term had even been coined yet, but I was like, oh, this is a lot bigger than I would have guessed.
2016,
and
it's sort of been Spencer.
And that's when I sort of realized, like, oh, this is also kind of been building in the background for a while now, kind of out of the Gamergate thing. Like, this is there are people who've spent a lot of time on the internet sort of obsessing over this stuff, and they've mostly been in the shadows, but they're increasingly not.
And, did you see that yesterday he came out posting this really big anti-vax propaganda video?
Again, just like the dumbest fucking shit. I'm not even gonna approach it on its merits, because it's obviously fucking stupid, but like, just the way you know, he got like responses from people who were willing to actually have a conversation about this, and just super dismissive and just bad at it. He's not a very smart guy. He's a talented guy, I'll give him that. I was never a fan. I think that came a little late for me. But he's not a smart dude. He should probably not insert his opinion onto the topics.
Like, talk about those kind of things. Did you find then that after that experience it kind of changed the way you were going to approach dealing with other online figures? Like, I don't know if you've covered, because you've been doing this for so long, I don't know if you've covered, like, I have been blissfully unaware of the litany of YouTube just drama after drama after drama. And it just seems like every single major creator at one point ends up getting big enough. Once they pass, I don't know, the 5 million sub mark, they've been trying to sleep with their fans, or they were trying to have sex with underage fans, or they were doing this, or they were saying something super racist, or they did blackface, or something like that.
There's a lot of scandals. This week it's Gus Johnson. Which is disappointing, because I like his videos, but sounds like he was a real bad boyfriend.
Oh, what a Gus Johnson.
It's not the worst, you know, set of accusations. It sounds like he's owning it about as well as you would want him to. But yeah, disappointing. Always disappointing to hear that someone you admire isn't a perfect little angel. When PewDiePie did that thing with Fiverr, where he had those children in Southeast Asia or whatever.
Hitler did nothing wrong.
No, it was worse than that. It was the death to all.
I'm
not going to say it, because you got your own problem with getting banned on here. But that thing, like,
we'll have to
and we covered it. We covered it, and like, again, like, I mean, obviously a lot of people were fucking mad, and that's their right. Like, for me, I was just like, for me, it was more, he tried to be funny and he overstepped it. And like, I hope he learns from this. Like, I feel like everyone around my age, like mid 30s, went through a very edgy phase as a youth. There was something in the water that made us all little shit stains who tried to be as edgy and offensive as possible while being funny. And none of that's aged that well, but it's still like, I get it. You watch something like South Park or It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, and you wanna do that yourself. So, I mean, when I watched the PewDiePie thing, I was like, I mean, the joke, as he presented it, the joke was that these people on Fiverr were willing to do this insane, offensive thing that he asked them.
Yeah, it was basically people who are poorer than me will take money to do the most offensive thing I can make them do, kind of
idea. Yeah, and I mean, it's horrible, but, like, I still did see, like, some comedy in that, but also it's, like, fucking extremely offensive. Like, you're going to get pushback on something like this. This is not good, especially people who don't know who you are and see only this thing that you've done. Like, they're going to rightfully be extremely offended. And, yeah, I think we covered that, and, like, again, just, like, so many people just jumping in to simp and stan for this guy, no matter what he did. And yeah, I think at that time we were like willing to give PewDiePie the benefit of the doubt. Then he did the whole the N-word thing in...
yeah, then he almost did it again.
PUBG, and then it was like, okay, there's a bit of a pattern here.
Yeah.
But well, I mean, even then, I think like JonTron, PewDiePie is just a dumb guy. Like, he hasn't had to really think about his, like, privilege and...
Yeah. But I'll push back on one thing. I think if you are in the middle of, like, a heated gamer moment, you're playing a video game and you just got killed and you're like, oh, fuck, right? The fact that that's something you would say out loud at that moment is indicative to me that you say that regularly with your friends, right? Like, you call each other that as an insult or something, or like an F-slur or something like that. That's why at that moment you just like, it was normal for you. And then afterwards you're like, shit.
If English isn't even your first language, like you are jumping straight to a racial slur in your second language, just knee jerk. Yeah, no, you're absolutely right about that. That's definitely, it wasn't his first time saying that, for sure.
Yeah, it wasn't his first rodeo.
But yeah, I mean, I obviously I can't read the dude's mind. I don't know. He was also like for a while there, people like looked in his follows, and he seemed to be really getting into like Stefan Molyneux and shit like that.
Oh yeah. He right after the Christchurch shooting, unfollowed all those major like IDW figures. But before that, it was like Stefan Molyneux, Lauren Southern, the ones who are obviously a little less problematic, but are still famous, like Jordan Peterson. Jordan Peterson has a video where he straight up's like, subscribe to PewDiePie. You know, he was in on the meme and everything. Like, they were all palling around. Ben Shapiro, he would send Ben Shapiro memes. Like, Ben Shapiro would be like, I got these memes from PewDiePie. I'm not entirely sure what memes are, but here we go. And then, like, go through them. So, like, he was definitely buddy-buddy with the conservative side of, you know.
Yeah.
The cultural.
I listened to a pretty interesting podcast. I think it was a New York Times podcast called Rabbit Hole. It came out a year or two ago. And it was just sort of about, like, people falling into these kind of extremist rabbit holes on the internet. But they actually, like, PewDiePie, towards the end of, like, the 10 episodes or so, PewDiePie becomes a pretty big focus of it. And they actually go and, like, talk to him for a whole episode. And I don't know, it's interesting. It's like I came away from that being just like, this guy has, you know, he's a nice enough dude, but he has no idea of like actions and consequences and privilege or anything like that. He's just ascended to a plane of existence at such a young age that he just like actually does not understand that you know,
the how much of his
influence
audience,
he has,
and
why it's bad to joke about things that you maybe don't actually believe, but you can be quoted as if you do believe. It was interesting. I do hope that after that Christchurch thing, he maybe, you know, took a step back and thought about
things. I thought that too. He was back in the news, I think, after that for making some statement, and then he was wearing the Iron Cross while he was making it, but at the same time, a lot of people said that like it was also probably, it could have been like a very popular like metal image as well, but he...
Yeah, I think that one, people, like, I don't know, there's so many, you know... The far right they love dog whistles. So when people who are investigating the far right, they look for any dog whistles they can find.
But like, yeah,
with
absolutely.
That one, I'm like, I don't know. That could just be a fucking jacket. Like, I don't.
I agree with you. But the thing I was going to say was that he pledged like $50,000, I think, to the ADL.
My God, I forgot about that.
Yeah, and while wearing the jacket, and then he withdrew that after he got a backlash from fans who were like, no, don't do this. So that was the last time.
Was it the Anti-Defamation League?
Yeah. Which, I mean, they have the problematic shit, but it's also really bad look to be like, I'm going to put this much money towards something against, like, you know, anti-Semitism and fighting hate speech, and then be like, oh, no, I'm not. I'm going to take that money back.
Yeah, that, oh, God. Yeah, that, I forgot about that whole thing. It was all very disappointing. When he did, like, pledge the money, I'm like, this is good. Sounds like he's thought about it, and he wants to, you know, do right. Just immediately, all of his Nazi fans are like, no, this is so disappointing. How could you? And I'm like, well, you should be glad that the Nazis are leaving your fandom. Because, I mean, like, we got better views early on when we sort of rode the line and didn't get too opinionated with stuff. We definitely, like, lost a lot of supposed longtime fans by becoming more and more open about, like, if you believe in this Nazi shit, fuck you, don't watch our videos. So, I mean, if I was in K-pop, just the biggest fucking YouTuber in the world, like, I would have seen that as a great opportunity to trim the fat.
Yeah.
Because even, you know, getting rid of whatever the 5% of your audience that's, like, straight up Nazis, like, you're still the biggest. Who cares? But, yeah, he just couldn't do it. That was very disappointing.
Did you guys find that your content, as you were shifting that way, because, like, I know you said you're not super political in the YouTube channel, but I find that you interact a lot with prominent, like, you know, what are considered lefties or progressive people on Twitter, for example, on a pretty regular basis, usually, like, you know, dunking on, like, right wingers and stuff like that. Do you find that that's how you kind of separate it? You kind of keep maybe more political opinions on one platform and keep YouTube to a set standard kind of way of doing it?
I mean, I'd say in general, like, I think maybe someday, once Internet Today has run its course, which won't be for a while, I might try getting into more political video content. But I mean, it's the kind of thing I'm just very scared. I know that I'm not knowledgeable or smart enough to really present myself as any sort of authority on that stuff, at least now. Like, I have opinions, and I definitely, like, I mean, anytime, like, topics like unionization and collective power come up in our videos, like, I get a little political. But I mean, on Twitter it's a lot easier to just, you know, shitpost politics. Mm-hmm. But if I was going to do video content about it, I'd want it prepared, more researched, and you know, right now it's just sort of not in the schedule, but someday maybe. For now, it's just we're just feeding them breadcrumbs. I'm tricking the children into being socialist against their will. They don't even know it. I'm slipping them red pills.
I was gonna say that, like, at the end of the day, if more people had even had that foresight, I think we'd have a lot better political pundits or contributors on the internet, right? If a lot of people were just like, I'm not just going to jump headfirst into this because I just want to do it because I think it'll make the monies or something. More like, if I do this, I want to be prepared. I think that's actually, like,
really salient advice. I also do think it's important that, like, not all leftists do leftist content.
Yeah.
There's a lot of good, I guess, leftist creators who just do, like, movie analysis and cultural analysis, not from, like, an explicitly political angle. Adam Conover of Adam Ruins Everything, he's, like, surprisingly, like, all of his fucking takes on Twitter, all of his political takes are spot on, which was super refreshing. But, like, he, and if you watch his show with, like, a careful eye, like, he definitely, like, his politics do go into the stuff he makes. It's not explicit, like, at all, which I think is cool.
I asked him that question, actually. Because I had him on the show. Yeah, and I was like, I'm just curious because, like, you know, people always label you as, like, a lefty or a progressive, but how do you feel? And his response is really similar to that. He's like, I know it's cliche to say I don't like labels, but he's like, it's way more important to me that my stuff is something that people can just think is accessible, but then I'm capable of turning them on to those ideas, such as pro-labor, pro-union, worker co-op, stuff like that. He was one of the big fighters for, what is it, Prop 22 in California, trying to fight against Uber and Lyft in that case. So, like, he definitely skews that way, but he's, I guess, hiding his power levels or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, yeah. and he also, very refreshingly, yeah, he's really into local LA politics, which it's like, you know, he's got however many hundreds of thousands of followers, but anytime local politics here is heating up, there's election, like he gets really into like city council stuff, which probably is kind of annoying to a lot of his followers, but I appreciate it. He's pretty, seems pretty involved around here. Which
I was gonna say, I didn't know you were LA based.
Oh yeah, yeah. And yeah, the politics in LA, yeah, pretty much like any major American city, you know, it's deep blue, and but try moving that Overton window even the slightest bit left, and the machine will just absolutely fucking devour you. But we got one good city council, I think. We have Nithya Raman and Paul Gascone, our district attorney, I think. I don't know. They're trying to, he immediately, they started going after him to get him removed from his job, because that's how it works. If you push against the status quo in a city like LA, New York, Chicago, these liberal bastion cities suddenly get real fucking conservative.
Someone just accurately said, look at the tile floors in his living room, Lance. I was like, oh yeah. I didn't even think about that. As regards to you living in LA, I was like, yeah, those are very typical LA tiles, aren't they?
I guess. I don't know. They're weird. I think they have little footprints in them, which is, I think, how they're sold.
Wait, like dog footprints or like baby footprints?
Yeah, like I think they're sold with like, there's like various animal like stamped footprints in them, like a few of them, randomly.
Oh, it is really random.
Yeah, it's a weird design choice.
Were y'all big supporters of the Bernie Sanders campaign at all?
Yes. Yes.
How was that from an LA / YouTube perspective?
From an LA perspective, it was really frustrating because LA and California went harder for Bernie Sanders than I think any other state in the U.S.
I felt that way.
The LA Times had an interactive map where you could go down to like the precinct level and see, like, and it was, there was a couple neighborhoods in the places you would expect, like Beverly Hills, where they went for Bloomberg, but everywhere, the entire map was basically Bernie won a majority of almost every neighborhood in LA. And it's like, that happened, and I was like, okay, well, this is huge. This is massive. How can this guy lose? And then, yeah, you saw what else happened.
Yeah.
But, yeah, no, that was the one time in my life I've been optimistic about politics. The Nevada caucus being maybe the high point. It was all downhill from there. I got fucking wasted that night. I was watching the results pour in, just sitting at a bar, just having the time. We're going to fucking win. We're going to get a socialist president. It all, like, within 3 weeks, it was fucking over. But, yeah, I mean, I don't think we ever made, like, and I kind of regret not making a endorsement video. It's, like, a little self-important, but I don't know. Everything's weird during elections. Who cares?
Oh, it's true. And, like, I don't think it would have come down to, if it was only for the Internet Today video, he would have made that extra push, you know? He could have really secured it.
It's like, would this make a difference? Is this a little bit conceited to think that anyone cares about our endorsement? But we were pretty clear in our videos around that time that we were in the tank for Bernie. You know, full disclosure, we are in the tank for Bernie. Just in case anyone thinks we're biased. We are absolutely biased. And there you go.
Where do you see you guys going in terms of your channel? Are you going to continue down the path you're going? Do you want to evolve, change it into something new? Is there elements you're wishing you had added? Are you guys going to do spin-offs, stuff like that?
I mean, I can see this going for like another, I'll be 40 years old in 4 years, 5 years. I think around then is Will and I might really start thinking about making some changes in my life, but it's right now it's a pretty well-oiled machine. It's literally just the two of us. We do everything. We don't have any employees because there's like paperwork involved in that, the IRS. That seems hard.
So all the thumbnails, the editing, the scripting, everything, just the two of you.
Yeah, it's not a lot of work. I mean, I guess it's kind of a lot of work for two people, but yeah, like right now it's like don't really feel the need to expand beyond that. We're already providing like 3.5 hours of content a week, which is a lot.
That's good. Yeah, that's a lot of content.
I feel like anything beyond that might be spreading things too thin. I mean, me personally, I have for a while thought about starting some sort of podcast of just conversations like the one we're having now, just as a sort of supplemental thing for people who would want that, but not as like a serious venture.
You're going to have so many comments now from people being like, what? We heard there's a podcast on the go. What is this? Elliot said it on the surfs. It's happening. I don't know the story behind this. How did y'all meet? I know I should have probably started with that like an hour ago, but
it was an arranged marriage. We were both working at Machinima and we were assigned to the channel that we were on.
Oh, just that's that you met at that juncture. It wasn't like you knew each other before and you proposed a show or anything.
Right. Yeah.
Ah, gotcha.
That worked out.
Yeah.
It's pretty rare, I think. Most people, the odds there, I don't know. Never tell me the odds, but I think they're quite low. That you get randomly paired up with a coworker and it fits well enough that you're still working together 7-8 years later.
That's actually incredibly rare. You're not kidding. That's like a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
I was going to say, the chat keeps saying these words that I guess I'm not as deep into your lore to understand them. And I assume they want me to bring them up, but I don't know what they mean.
Well, fire away.
Okay. I'm trying to scroll up because more people are like, hey, you never answered our questions. We need to know. Tuggies.
Oh.
Tuggies.
You got two chats going here.
So I do. I do. It's very hard to... It's hard to kind of keep up.
Yeah. Okay. What's like the advantage to having the
independent one? Own...
Yeah.
So, anyone who subs or gifts stuff on there doesn't go to Amazon, which is kind of nice.
And Amazon... Is this through Streamlabs?
No, this is... Streamlabs OBS is what's streaming into this, but the site is just mirroring Twitch right now. And yeah, but the site itself runs on something called, I think, Whiteleaf. I don't get, there's not a cut that like YouTube or Twitch takes, right? Which is pretty significant, 40 or 60%, depending on your platform, which is nice. Also, you can have unlimited emotes and make them whatever you want, which is also nice. Twitch doesn't, like, when I joined Twitch, I got the purple check mark right away because we had a YouTube channel already. And I was like, cool, I can't wait to stream on Twitch because YouTube is very restrictive for streaming. They don't let us talk about like LGBTQ issues without demonetizing us. That really pisses me off. Twitch has all these cool things where you can raid each other. So that's really fun. So I was really excited. But then once you start seeing your Twitch payouts, you're like, it's pretty astounding how much money Twitch actually takes as a cut from, you know, everything from, you know, your subs to your bits to all that kind of stuff. That's one of the advantages. Also, if you get canceled,
claim to be a leftist, and yet you solicit donations from your audience.
I know.
Checkmate.
I also don't live in abject poverty. I'm trying to
socialism
work
is win no house.
No house and garbage bag with rope is usually how I like to do it. But yeah, the other big thing is we get canceled. Like I got shut down by YouTube twice. Without the real cancel culture, as in people with no power getting their channel shut down, has happened to us twice. And so when that, I just got actually banned on Twitch for 30 days, but they reduced it to 7. But same thing. So when that happened, I was like, well, everyone who is a longtime fan of the show doesn't have to worry. They don't have to jump between this or that or this or where are you now? YouTube or are you DLive? Or are you on Rumble, Roikfin, any of the other ones?
Oh,
you know?
I see. Yeah, so it's you like just go to the same website.
Yeah.
I get it.
Yeah, it's like a home.
Same website, same chat.
Same. Ugh,
was it? Did you get banned because or suspended because of talking about the Twitch leaks?
Because I showed the salaries. Because I showed. I know. My defense was everyone was doing it, but yeah. So
yeah.
I, I mean, I had a LARP. Someone came in my chat and they're like, congratulations, number 3,328. I was like, whoa, that's my actual ranking? They're like, yeah. I was like, that's not bad. And all of a sudden,
that's not bad.
And then I was like, what is everyone else? And then I just started looking it up. And then, of course, their salaries are on the screen. So you're not, that is, like, to be fair, is 100% TOS. It's very blatantly sharing private information of other streamers. So
I mean, I guess, but it's like, this is their fault. They, right? God, I read an article right after it went down. Can't remember. It was like Ars Technica or Wired, but it was about how this latest Twitch hack was just it stems from a hack all the way back in 2013 where they had to like basically rebuild the entire website from the ground up, but they cut a few corners and there were just a few little bits of code from the old hack left over, and that's the recent one went down. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, they discovered, it was like right around the time Amazon bought them, they discovered that like someone had a backdoor into their platform for like a year and just everything was infected. So they were super quiet about this, like no disclosure, because the law doesn't require you to be like open about these things. Why would you be?
Yeah, no.
But they slowly just like rebuilt the website over the course of a few weeks, making their employees work like 20-hour days and just live in the office. But they didn't completely rebuild it, and that's how the most recent hack happened. Oh, yeah. Vice. Yeah, someone put it in your search chat.
See, like I never told
the story of Virgin Pizza.
I never got like an apology or anything. They leaked a ton of my information, you know? And like, I don't care about them leaking our Twitch salary. Like I make my Patreon public. Like I'm a big person. Like, oh, that's, I have to keep that secret. I don't care about that. But I do care if like your stream key is out there or your password is out there or other stuff that may prevent me from actually doing my show. That to me was like, well, you do have a responsibility to keep that safe, right? I feel. I don't think that's unfair.
I just want to be clear that when I jokingly criticized Lance for soliciting donations, that was a joke. I think it's okay.
that's one of the mods. Like, wait, Lance, defend yourself. You're not a shill.
That wasn't a real critique.
Ah, it's okay. I knew. Oh fuck, it's already 5. All right, I have to leave to go pick up my doggy from daycare, so I have to wrap this up, unfortunately. Elliot, this was an absolute pleasure. I'm glad we finally did this. I feel like we've been friendsies on Twitter for a long time, but we've never actually cross-collaborated in any way. It's been long overdue.
Yeah, this is fun. I'm happy to... This is the easiest... Like, you know, my job is like reading and writing and editing. Jumping on a stream, this is fun for me. I don't have to do anything.
You get to talk shit. You get people, you know, calling you out on your fake jokes.
This was a pleasure. I'd be happy to come back anytime.
I love it. All right, everybody, you know what to do. Go subscribe to Internet Today and go follow Elliot. It's Elliot. What's the Twitter handle?
It's ELIOTETC. It's on Twitter, and then YouTube channel is Internet Today TV.
Based.
And yeah.
Thank you so much, Elliot. That was a blast.
Thank you. Thank you, chat.
So you've just been listening to an episode of The Surf Times. And if you enjoy it and want to see The Surf Times, you can go to wearesurfs.com or watch the live shows at thesurfs.tv. And also everywhere social media is sold, basically thesurfs.tv. You'll find us there, twitter.com/thesurfstv, for example. It would also help us out tremendously if you could leave a good review of this podcast if you enjoyed it, either on, I don't know, iTunes or wherever you're podcasting. Apparently it does help, and yeah, we hope to see you soon.
To our gods, Xander Corvus and Peyton L. Joost, we will build a ladder to heaven to deliver you the daily news. To our monarch, Tom Spiker, we are your most humble of clownish jesters. To our lords, Trevor R. and Alexander Thaler, you have our undying fealty. To our knights of the round table, Nate, that one guy, Hagbird Celine, Matthew Scarborough, Stellar Vision, Ariana McCarthy, Daniel Sutton, Ants Are Still Running the World, Coulter Smith, Tom Groh, Val 9000, Jenna Tal, Quiet 185, Anna Loves Riley, Riley and Anna, Omni, Poodle Hawk, The Tim Caucus, Multimondi, Trevor Janis, Lemmy 101, Anthropofojack, Saren 42, Chronic to Hemphog, Catherine, Radical Maniac, Ramon Acosta, Incosin, Violent Orchard, Sophie Bibby, Political Puppy, Andreas Chiringuito, Zach Christensen, Josh Mickelson, Todd Buckingham, and Todd Lajeunesse. We shall meet you in the tavern, and we raise a drink, and we salute you.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.